Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Today we're talking with Attorney Jim Reedy. He is the attorney in New Hampshire. What was it? New Hampshire's attorney? Is that your new title, Jim?
I went for emperor, but that wasn't available.
Clearly. So. You know, I feel privileged because I've had Maine's employment attorney on. That's, in case you didn't know, Peter Lowe. Now I have New Hampshire's employment attorney. I'm going to be going for all 50 states. I think that's going to be my new mission here. He's just going to go quiet. Now, this is the first time I think I ever heard an attorney go quiet. Look at that. Hey, you know, we're talking about some serious things here today, and I appreciate you getting on the phone with me. We're going to be talking about layoffs and RIFs. We're going to be talking about it because it is unfortunately that time of year again when employers have to sometimes make decisions. They've got through three quarters. They're looking at what they're dealing with in terms of their sales, their profitability. And, you know, they may have to make some decisions. And I think it's a timely topic in terms of what employers need to avoid for problems. And what they need to think about. So kind of give me an overview of your thoughts on that.
Well, thanks, David. You're spot on. This is regrettably, as leaves fall, so do employees. I've been practicing for over 24 years, and every year but one, we've seen somewhere around the middle of November until about early January, companies going through layoffs. And I mean for-profit, not-for-profit, large and small, making adjustments to their payroll. And I think that there are a number of reasons for it. I mean, it's, as you said, end of third quarter, projections for fourth quarter, projections for the next fiscal year or calendar year. That cathartic year end where it's things aren't working out, we're going to start fresh in the new year, and we're going to have you ask this employee or that group to go and so on. But we've seen it every year but one. And it's interesting, the one year we didn't see it, believe it or not, was 2007. Because 2007 was one of those years where it happened all throughout the year. But every other year, and it's happening again. Clients have already started to call, and they said that we need to prepare for a reduction in force, a layoff, this strategic termination or that.
Well, you know, it's important to understand that no company likes to do this. You know, I always talk about the fact that employers like to do the right thing. And unfortunately, the right thing occasionally is that they have to go through these difficult times. You know, I don't know a single employer, HR professional, or business leader out there that likes this. But it is a necessary thing that sometimes has to happen.
It really is. It's almost like going to the dentist. I mean, it's and nobody likes to go, but it's necessary. I will tell you that my experience has been the same. And if you think of the time of year, it's the holiday season. Who wants to put someone out of work at that time? So from my experience, and I'm sure you've had the same, that most companies that go through this also provide some form of severance or assistance or outplacement, because for those who are old enough to remember the movie Kramer versus Kramer, they talked about him needing to get a job, Dustin Hoffman needing to get a job in the holiday season. They realized, they said, nobody hires really during that period of time. So you have that perfect storm of the layoff, the holidays, and nobody's hiring around that time. So from my experience, HR people, even though they have to do the difficult task, and it is difficult because they're people and everybody lives up to their income level, they try to assist them in any way they can, regardless of the circumstances, to get through that transition period.
Yeah, there's no question that at CMAcareer.com we go through this a lot. You know, I mean, we deal with a lot of outplaced individuals. And, you know, honestly, there's never a good time. But I always will encourage employees who are dealing with this situation that if you have skills, companies will hire. So, yes, it may not be a good time, but the fact is if you have a skill set that is needed, if you have a personality that can be created, if you have an overview of something that is desired, you will get hired. And just it's about bringing that out of you, whether you've been out of the market 5, 10, maybe even 20, 30 years, as we've seen in the recent future.
Right, and I think that's true, and I think people have to be creative because our unemployment rate continues to hover around nationally around 7.5%. In New Hampshire, we're around 5.5, and it depends upon the industry and upon the season. But so the rates are still high, and some would argue the rates are actually higher than that because people that have dropped off the grid. But for those that that are willing to, as you say, either promote themselves or reinvent themselves, there is work available.
No question about it. So let's back up for just a second and say, okay, we have an employer that's coming in and having to do or deal with a layoff or RIF, and a couple you just talked about. What is it that they need to look at from either a regulatory part, if you want to start there, which they have to do, to one of the things they need to think about in terms of getting through this process?
Well, the one thing about employment law is that there is actually sort of a map. In the old days, employment law was more based on the common law, which was if someone could craft a legal theory, wrongful discharge or something along those lines, they had a chance at pursuing a claim. In the last 20, 25 years, the law has become more formulaic, and most employment laws are based upon the number of employees that you have. By way of example, if you've got one employee, you're covered by workers' comp, unemployment, and your wage laws, state wage laws. And then it jumps up to, in New Hampshire, 6 to be covered by state discrimination laws, and then 15 for federal discrimination laws, 20 for age discrimination and COBRA, and so on, all the way up to the one that applies here, or those certainly apply as well, but the one that applies here when you talk about a larger RIF or layoff is the WARN Act, the Worker Readjustment Notification Act, and that's a federal statute. And so for employers with more than 100 employees, and they have one of two events happening. One is a complete shutdown of the plant, of the operations, or a mass layoff representing at least a third of the employees, representing at least 50 employees. They have to go through steps, and those steps include notifying the employees 60 days in advance. If they're unionized, notifying their representatives of the union, notifying the mayor of the community or the chief executive officer of the community, and so on. And if they are not able to, and there are exceptions to the WARN Act, if they're not able to, then you have to give notice as soon as they can. And to the extent that they don't give notice, they have to pay the wages and the benefits the employee would otherwise receive during that 60-day period. Now, that's the federal statute. And a lot of employers don't have 100 or more employees, and so they go when they go through this. So a lot of states have adopted what's called the Mini WARN Act. And the Mini WARN Act is a lower threshold, the number of employees. And in New Hampshire, we have a Mini WARN Act, and it requires notice 60 days in advance, but the notice is broader to more individuals, more entities, governmental entities principally, and so on. But what's interesting is our Mini WARN Act was originally a lower threshold of 75 employees, with a third of the workforce representing at least 25. It was amended back up to 100, so similar to the federal WARN Act, but we still have the 25 employees being affected. So you're capturing more people. The reason why they did that, that was during the Lynch administration, was because there were abrupt closings of plants and people were out of work. What that means is not only a disruption of the family income, but also a disruption of the local economy and a tax upon, a burden upon the state unemployment system, and oftentimes people in mass applying for benefits. So that's the first thing that employers have to look at. Am I covered by the WARN Act? Am I covered by the Mini WARN Act? And if so, what notices do I have to give? Absent that, then, or in addition to that, rather, you're going to be looking at everything from payment of wages, unemployment claims, are people on workers' comp, and more importantly, when you look at it, when I'm considering a RIF or a layoff and terminations, assuming I'm below the WARN Act, but I still have other issues, you still have to look at the composition of who's going to be affected. Why? Because we live in an age where there are many protected classes, whether age, gender, maternity, being a subset of gender, Family Medical Leave Act, workers' comp, race, disability, and so on. There are many protected classes. So if you find in your initial pass that you have employees that are, all the people that are going to be in the layoff are women over age 50, well, you've got a problem or a potential problem because it looks like that's who you selected.
You know, it's interesting. Employers will say that they're looking for, maybe they're closing a plant, maybe they're closing a department, maybe they're closing, or they're just doing a general layoff to do headcount. And a lot would say that they want to look at the ones that don't necessarily perform as well. And this would be an opportunity for them to, improve their workforce. What's a risk to that?
The risks are if you then, the second tier below that is, well, the people that aren't performing happen to be our older workers, or people that English is a second language, and therefore they're having difficulty understanding instructions or our protocols and so on. So you really want to mitigate or reduce the risk. You want to document those performance problems. So when the person who's let go, and we'll talk about releases in a minute, but the person who's let go says, well, you let me go, or you selected me for this RIF or layoff because I am 57 years old, and I'm more expensive than the 25-year-old you're likely to replace me with. You can say, no, it was because of performance issues, and let us show you why, either attendance issues or your production was low, or you had misconduct issues or the like, whatever it was, that, or there were redundancies, or you didn't have the skill set that we needed. If it's documented, you can rebut that allegation of, in this case, age discrimination.
We're having a conversation with Attorney Jim Reedy, and we're talking about layoffs and RIFs. Jim, you know, one of the things that employers look at in terms of this, and they're making these tough decisions, is how do they handle the onslaught of the paperwork that has to be done? These are things that are required in terms of COBRA, in terms of all these other requirements that are out there. HR professionals get pretty bogged down with all this. How do they go about ensuring that it's done properly, especially when they're, you know, maybe it's not something they've ever done before, or it's something that they get very confused about?
Well, I think that certainly seek assistance. If you've never done it before, there are lots of things available, whether it's your local labor and employment attorney, not just your general attorney, but someone who's got a background in labor and employment, so he or she has done it before. The other is the Society for Human Resource Management, SHRM. They've got white papers and the like. Your local HR association. Now, you have to be discreet, because you don't want to say, hey, by the way, we're about to do a massive layoff here in town, but don't tell anybody. That's so salacious that people will start to tell.
Yeah, that's
it'll
not going to work.
Town before you, right. Yeah. So, but planning is important. So if you haven't done it before, a part of the planning process is giving yourself the time, because there'll be meetings, there'll be discussions, there'll be a vetting process. There's even a horse trading process where you say, we need to trim the staff by this amount, and they go back to the department heads and the like, and they say, this is what we need, and this is the selection criteria we want. I prefer performance, job performance and job skills, getting away from other issues, and documenting it and so on. But be prepared, because say we're 60, 90 days out. In that period of time, people will retire, they'll quit, they'll move on, other things will happen. They'll announce that they need to have an operation and so on. So they'll be moving people in and off of the spreadsheet. And that's just the way it is. It's a part of risk management, but it's also a part of managing the number you need. And sometimes your business either declines or improves, so you have to have some flexibility. But the key is planning and being careful and contemplative.
When you don't have the time, it's an immediate decision that has to be done right now, next day, couple days, because of a dire circumstance. Maybe you lost the key client that's 50% of your business. Maybe something's happened and it's dramatic and it's a cash issue. Are there warnings that need to be done still in a quick sense when there's no time?
Yes, and it depends upon if your organization is union or non-union. Let's assume that we're talking about non-union, because most of the Northeast is non-union. But let me just say, in the event of a union one, you would notify the union representatives, this is what we need to do and why, and this is what's happening. Because in a union setting, you might have bumping rights and you might have recall rights. If it's truly a layoff where there's an expectation I might be able to come back, then that's an issue, and it may be controlled by the collective bargaining agreement. Assuming we're talking about a non-union setting, what do you need to do? Well, there are carve-outs I mentioned before. If you're covered by WARN or mini-WARN, both statutes generally have carve-outs for truly exigent emergency circumstances, unforeseeable. You know, the Hurricane Sandy shut us down, something along those lines, act of God, or lost that really big client, or the merger didn't go through and we're in dire straits. We've lost our financing and so on. So you would still try to notify employment security. You try to give some notice to people that it's happening, and it's happening today, tomorrow, next week. and you're lining up payroll and the like, you're going to notify your insurance carriers for purposes of COBRA that COBRA notices will coming out because of the termination of employment being a qualifying event. And way down on the list would be notifying your local police department if it's truly important and there may be issues of potential workplace unrest. But that's usually very unlikely. So you want to notify the employees if you can and give them some certainty as to when it's going to happen and what it's going to mean to them.
We're having a conversation with Attorney Jim Reedy. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
In today's digital age of instant communication, the art of conversation is being lost. Too often, verbal communication is reduced to shouting, not talking. Join me, Steve Woods, also known as Steve-O, for Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. For inspired conversations with extraordinary guests, we'll talk sports, health, green, and life its own self. Catch Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on News Talk WLOB, AM 1310, streaming live on WLOBradio.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're speaking with Attorney Jim Reedy, and he is talking about the common problems with layoffs and RIFs. Jim, these are not easy conversations. These are not things that HR professionals, business leaders, CEOs, or anybody, for that fact, really likes to do. But it's important to be done right, right? I mean, it's just so important. What does an employer need to know? We've talked about kind of all the notifications. What do they need to do next?
So once you've basically come together with sort of your list, and I've got my spreadsheet of the departments involved, and I've talked to the department heads, and we've cleared it with everyone else, and I've looked at my WARN notices or mini WARN to see if those apply, and I've checked off whether or not I need to notify union representatives and the like, and I've also figured out who at employment security in the state that I need to notify, workplace readiness and the like. I've lined up my payroll. I've talked to my insurance carrier about COBRA notices, my third-party administrator about COBRA notices and the like. And I have made other arrangements for purposes of, with my department heads, of who's going to cover what, because that's, you're losing bodies, you're losing people. That's going to transition, so you're going to have other things, and it's going to affect your scheduling and the like. So once you're lining all that stuff up, then you start to say, okay, when is implementation going to happen, and what is it going to mean to us? It's basically your D-Day. And just like with D-Day, things change. But more importantly, before the things change, silence is critical.
Now, if I could jump in just for a second on that, because I think that is probably one of the hardest things that you find. Everybody understands confidentiality, right? Everybody understands that they have to keep it quiet. But there is this natural human tendency to want to say something to someone and that you feel bad for them. Can you provide maybe some of the legal overview as to what could really harm a organization if they were to say something to the wrong person?
Oh, sure. So, I mean, you immediately comes to mind would be discrimination claims. Someone saying, well, I was selected because I complained about my boss at the office party, the holiday party, and so on, or I had to remind him the eyes go up here, and you know, he seems to favor men over women in these assignments, or she seems to favor women over men, and so on. It's because of my age. It's because I have a bad back, and I've told them that, and I can't do things like I did before, so it must be because of my chronic illness or injury that I've been selected, and so on. Because we're talking about protecting incomes and legacy and security, people get immediately protective and start to think about ways in which they can protect themselves. Another thing that comes up actually is, and I've seen it a number of times over the years, if someone is indiscreet or if someone is just attentive enough to know there are changes coming. I've seen a lot of suits meeting in the conference room. There's been an increase in FMLA requests and workers' comp claims. People feeling that either it was time, I've got to go out on leave, and it's legitimate, or I'm going to protect myself because they can't fire me if I'm out on this protected leave, or it will be more difficult for them to fire me. And that's true to a certain extent. It's not an absolute.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that, you know, employers recognize the need that they want to keep these things quiet. I mean, the damage to, you know, the company's reputation, the damage to an executive's reputation, all that's important for future growth, future within or outside of the organization, you know, that they spilled the beans or let it out. But I think that it was important for people to understand that there are actual consequences that could happen in terms of an organization.
Well, there's that, and, you know, actually one thing that just comes to mind too, David, is that what if I have someone who's the subject of a non-compete agreement or a non-solicitation agreement, and I don't want them to go to a competitor, and actually they may not be on the list, and that person's getting nervous. Oh, the company's having hard times. You actually increase the likelihood of either espionage or disclosure of confidential information to a competitor because people are getting nervous, and so you have the unplanned departures that actually may harm the business further or the organization further. The other is, you're right, by our very nature, whether it's out of compassion or just out of pure gossip, we like to share this information. If someone were to say to you, David, now obviously I know you're discreet, but David, I've got some really top secret information. Now look, you didn't hear it from me, and you cannot repeat it to anyone else. There have actually been studies said that even though I say those things as a disclaimer, the person, the way they process it is, well, if you told me, it couldn't have been all that secret.
That's right. That's absolutely true.
And so the next person, it's like a shampoo commercial. They tell someone who tells someone and so on. The information might get transmogrified and distorted, but it also gets out very quickly because it's almost like in the movie Jaws. When you yell Barracuda, nobody really pays attention. You yell Shark, they pay attention. You say companies struggling a little bit, people pay attention a little bit. When you say layoffs, terminations, and RIFs are coming, it gets their attention.
No question. So we've talked a little bit about, as you said, you know, preparation, getting everything lined up. D-Day's here. D-Day's arrived. What now?
So D-Day's arrived. Presumably you've got in place not only your list, but you've got your contingencies in place. Okay, at this time, we're going to be holding a meeting of the people affected, whether by department or en masse. We're going to have a larger meeting. I'm going to have HR there. I'm going to have a chief executive officer there. And I'm going to have a department head there to explain. The reason why we're calling you here today is you're being selected for the company's going through or the organization's going through a reduction in force or a layoff. Now, if it's a layoff in the true sense of the term, things are slow. We're going to let you go. But our hope is in a short period of time, you'll be back, and this is the mechanism we have. Assuming we're not talking about that, we're talking about this is the end of your employment. This is what's happening. This is when it will be effective. This is what you're going to be receiving by way of final pay and benefits. And if there's severance, if there's outplacement, if there are other things involved, like assistance with unemployment, this is how it's going to work. You have various waves, just like D-Day, the initial bombardment followed by the invasion followed by the support services that follow afterwards. It's very similar in that regard. So you're going to have the initial shock and awe of that meeting. And then after that, it's important to have follow-up meetings, with whether it's HR, payroll, department heads, and the like. And that stuff is very important. Perhaps the most important advice you can provide with regard to these matters is do not let it end at that meeting. Continue to follow up, even if the person's calling during employment or once they've gone for some time and they have simple questions about either references or I left my, you know, picture of my kids behind, or I don't understand this cobra. I thought it was a snake. I didn't realize it had to do with benefits. Returning the phone call is critical because, one, it's the right thing to do and following up with them. The other is it's a large way of managing your risk. If someone feels like they're paid attention to, that they're respected, that someone is responding to them, they're less likely to file an adverse claim of some sort against the employer.
Well, you're right on the money. I think when I think about when outplacement occurs, the number one thing that happens is somebody says, okay, this has happened to me. What do I do now? What is the forward process that I need to go through? What do I have to deal with for unemployment? How do I file for it? What does this mean? Does severance have any effect on it? Is there anything that I have to do in terms of paperwork to make that happen? Oh my gosh, when is my medical benefits going to end? Or, you know, when does COBRA kick in? How much does that cost? What do I deal with my 401k, my benefits, anything having to do with that? All that is immediately comes to mind. And as you said, when you get to the kitchen table at home, that's probably what your spouse is going to ask questions on. So, well, how do we deal with all this?
People can retain a certain amount, but after a certain amount, they sort of shut down because they start to reflect on what they heard, and then it may not absorb all of it. The best thing is to have a short but concise and complete menu for the person. Here's the takeaway. This is what's going to happen. And with important either email or phone numbers of the people to contact and name. So when I go to meet with my significant other at home on the kitchen table, when I provide the news and the details, and I start to do my own personal planning as to how this is going to happen, and that piece of paper, and I think that's critical, is moving forward. We do not want people to entrench, because entrenchment means they're not going to move forward. If you don't move forward, it looks like you're going to spend your time and energy resisting the RIF or the layoff, and perhaps even talking to a lawyer. We don't want that, because nobody benefits from that, and the person doesn't move on. Now, even if a person has a legitimate claim, it takes a period of time for that to wash through, and basically the person really can't move on. So by providing the helpful list of information, explaining the documents that you're given, whether it's wages, benefits, 401k rollover, conversion, or continuation of benefits, whatever it is, and it's all right there so I can refer to it if I didn't fully understand it. Now, whether we're talking about someone who is, you know, college educated or beyond, or someone who is a simple peace worker that has a limited education, whether we're talking about an elderly person or a person who's a 20-something, everyone still needs to have something to back up and support the information they've been given, because there's no question it's going to be information overload at that meeting.
No, it absolutely is. That is something that always happens. And look, in any meeting, you can only go for so long between people, you know, before people just tune out that information. And so when a traumatic event, and this is really the only bigger traumatic event, according to most surveys, would be death. And in a sense, this is the death from your employer in some ways. And, you know, people do take it, probably one of the hardest things out there. And so it's very important that it's done right. You talked a little about severance. And, of course, this show is, of course, heard in about 30 states across the country. And one of the things that people say is, well, severance is different in every state. I think in the state of Maine, we're based here. You know, severance only affects 1 week's pay if it's paid all in one lump sum. But if it's paid over a period of time, then it affects each week's pay. You obviously have the information having to do in New Hampshire or other states. Talk a little about severance and its importance and how employers should think about that.
Yeah, while I work in New Hampshire, I'm also admitted in other states to practice law, and a lot of my clients are located all over the U.S. And so I've had many occasions to deal with this issue in other states. Whether we're talking about California or we're talking about the Deep South, Midwest, or the Northeast, there are some common threats to severance. First of all, you have to determine, is severance due as a matter of contract? Sometimes it is for chief executive officer. He or she may have, in the event of my termination that is not for cause, I get 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, and so on. Sometimes as a matter of the company handbook, even though I always recommend against this, companies have a policy or practice of paying severance. And I recommend this, if you're doing even a one-off termination and you have some degree of risk associated with it of a potential claim, and more that's the case with almost every termination, and you want to be able to just move on, the company move on, the individual move on, you ask them to sign a release, a general release. And every lawyer that works in this area has his or her own form release. I certainly have mine. And you want them to sign the release language. Going to the internet, and let me back up. So severance. If I'm going to pay severance and it's not otherwise due, my recommendation is get something in exchange. The thing in exchange to get is a general release of all claims. If it is otherwise due as a matter of contract or policy, you're going to need to pay more than what is due in order to have that exchange. It's called consideration in support of the release. How much more is due? The law says a mere peppercorn will do. Something a little bit more than what you're entitled to would be adequate consideration to support that release. And the person's releasing you of all known and unknown claims up to the point in which they sign the release. Now that release, and I'll go back to talking about severance in a second, but that release is very important because in exchange for whether I'm paying the person $500 or $50,000, if not drafted properly, is effectively worthless.
We're talking with Jim Reedy, and we're having a conversation on layoffs and RIFs. We're going to be right back, and we're going to talk about those release and waivers on the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice. Continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. We are talking with Jim Reedy, and he is the attorney who is going over layoffs and RIFs. And before we went to break, Jim, you were talking about the importance of carefully crafting releases and waivers when it comes to severance. Talk a little bit more about that. Tell the importance of that and how to properly handle it.
The thing about releases is it is a binding contract. A general release, if properly drafted, basically says the employee is saying to the employer, I'm releasing you of all claims. Now, put a little asterisk next to that because there are some claims you cannot release, regardless of how the agreement is drafted. But I'm releasing you of all claims up until the point where I sign this agreement, and this is what I acknowledge, in addition to other obligations, both by the employer and the employee. That is important because, presumably, you've paid the employee some decent amount of money in exchange for that person signing the release. Now, why would you have them sign a release? Do you have to do it in all instances? No, you don't. You do it to manage risk. And you also do it because I'm paying you money, I might as well get something in exchange. So if I'm paying severance, let's get something in exchange for it, if that severance is not otherwise due. And what am I getting in exchange? I'm getting peace of mind. I know that you can't sue me for a large menu and a growing menu of potential claims, and we can move on. But there are some exceptions to that. I'll talk about that in a second. One important caveat, one important warning to our HR audiences, don't, even though your CEO says, look, money's tight, the CFO says, I don't want you talking to a lawyer, can't you go to one of your HR associations? Can't you go on the websites that you belong to and get us a form? And you absolutely can. You certainly can. The danger with that is, for those that spend time on the internet, you know that in addition to the many helpful things out there, there's a lot of junk out there. And you do not want to have something that is not enforceable in your state. So what, by way of example, my company's in Montana, and we're going through tough times. We need to do a layoff. We've never done one before. My CFO says, don't spend a lot of money. Just get me some forms that I can use, or you recommend. I need to get a release. I listened to the HR Power Hour recently, and that brilliant attorney from New Hampshire said, this is what we need. And so I went online, and I found this thing, and it looks really good. The problem is the release is from California and has all sorts of language and references a couple of things about all the many laws in California that you're releasing, but I'm in Montana. And they don't apply here. Further, it has other language that doesn't necessarily apply, and some of the steps that we have to go through. But more importantly, it says, and the governing law of this agreement is the state of California, and all disputes in connection with this matter shall be in name a county in California, and so on. Well, that was in sort of buried in a part of the agreement nobody really paid attention to, but I gave it out to all my employees. Oh, and by the way, it didn't include magic language for employees over age 40. So the person signs it, they collect the money, they go off, and then they go home and they meet with others and they talk to somebody at a barbecue and they say, well, you're 67 years old and they let you go with no warning. You should sue them. And the person starts to think about it and they stew about it, and HR has not returned their phone calls and they didn't get everything they were promised. So they turn around and they realize, you know, maybe I will sue. And they find a lawyer, and the lawyer looks at the agreement and they said, this agreement's in California. Did you ever work in California? No. And it didn't include the magic language under the Older Worker Benefit Protection Act because you're 67 and over the threshold age of 40. It's an unenforceable release. Does that mean I have to return the money? No. So the employee can keep the money and still potentially sue you because you had a defective release.
You know, there's so many things that they have to really look at. And, of course, Jim, if they had listened to the HR Power and that semi-brilliant attorney in New Hampshire, they would have known not to do that. But that's okay. I digress. You know, I think that this is certainly one of the things that, when you think about it, seems logical, seems common sense. But they are, you know, look, you're in a crisis mode. And CFOs, not trying to do anything wrong, you're doing a layoff. Last thing you want to do is spend a ton of money when you have these situations. But really, it's being quite short-sighted and not looking at the long-term impact of which could cost you a fortune in the long run.
Right. It ties back to what we said before, was the time spent in planning, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So the time spent in planning, not only in selecting who's going to be affected by the layoff and what's going to happen afterwards, but also just the other details of everything from lining up benefits and the like. But when you're focused on that release language, realize that one agreement, one size, does not fit all. If I've got a 28-year-old employee, and it's a single termination, meaning I'm just terminating him or her because of either redundancy or the job performance is not good, I can use a release or not, but I don't need any magic language. If the person, however, is over age 40, and again, it's a single termination, if one of the things I'm asking them to release is age discrimination under the Age Discrimination Employment Act, which is a federal statute which applies to workplaces with 20 or more employees, I've got to give that person 21 days to consider signing the agreement. That, again, is if the person is over age 40, and when that statute was adopted in 1968, 40 was considered to be old, and you know, we're, of course, increasingly feeble-minded once you cross that threshold. So it has to be in plain English. It has to be give the person 21 days to consider to signing the agreement and 7 days to revoke whenever they sign within that 21-day period, revoke their acceptance. You also have to advise the person the opportunity to speak with a lawyer at your own expense, not at the company's expense, to review the agreement and other things in there as well. And that should be in plain language. Now, that's again a single termination. What if you have a larger layoff or RIF? That period of time then expands from 21 days to 45 days, and you still have a 7-day revocation period. There's one more important element to add to that. When you have that larger RIF or an early exit incentive, which is, look, I will give you an incentive, I'll give you this amount of money if you resign now and go now. I'm thinning the herd that way, as opposed to a termination for misconduct or for a performance or for redundancy. You have to add a census, and it's the census is a list of the job titles, the age of the person in that job, whether they're eligible or selected for the layoff, and comparable titles, job titles, not names, but titles, the age of the person in that job, and whether they were selected or not. And so oftentimes the CFO looks at that and says, oh my God, you've just given them a roadmap to sue us for age discrimination. You should all the people under age 40 that were not selected and all the people over age 40 that were selected. That's what the law requires. It's the Older Worker Benefit Protection Act that requires you give that notice. If you don't give that notice, or if it's improperly drafted, attached to your severance agreement, you have an ineffective or unenforceable agreement.
Well, this is very important for employers to understand, because I would suspect that a lot of employers know this, but there are quite a few that don't. And I think that, you know, maybe they've never had to deal with this, never had to, you know, go through these processes. But these are all critical things that can keep them out of trouble. So, Jim, overall, when you're looking at an employer that has to deal with this whole layoff or RIF situation, Can you kind of give an overview of what an employer should do, start to finish, of what we kind of talked about? Kind of wrap up some of the things, not only that we've talked about today, but some of the things that you may not have already spoken about.
Sure. So, you know, for looking at this, and HR professionals are incredibly efficient and cost effective, and so they like bullet points. And so we'll reduce this to bullet points. First of all, what you should do, you should first of all know what laws apply to your organization and what those laws either prohibit or require. That's kind of that first pass at, okay, this is the size of our organization, these are the laws that apply to us, because you don't want to worry yourself with laws that don't apply to you. If you're a small organization, many of the things that we talked about, whether it's the WARN Act or larger things, will not apply to you, the Family Medical Leave Act and so on. Once you've done that calculation and you know what the laws either prohibit or require, then you move on to saying, okay, now why do we need to reduce staff and who's going to be impacted by it and when? So that's the beginning of mapping out of what's going to happen and who's involved. Then you look at the selection criteria and HR raising the hand and saying in the management meeting, okay, I understand what we have to do, I understand what you want to do, but we need to look at our selection criteria. And it can be one thing or it can be a couple of things in the menu. Redundancy or job skills. It can be job elimination or consolidation. It can be performance issues. Or, as you said, David, it could be something catastrophic. We just need to get rid of the entire division doing this or that because we don't need it anymore. Carefully document the rationale and the backup for these decisions. You know, there's an old adage that says, never write when you can speak, never speak when you can nod, never nod when you can wink, and if at all possible, don't wink because it will get you in trouble. There is a natural reticence not to write things down. But in this area, it's critical, at least in the management meetings, why so-and-so was selected. Or even if you're not going to write that down, having other backup in the personnel file, whether it's warnings or performance criteria and evaluation and so on. And then the next is understanding and complying with your notice provisions, whether it's a matter of contract with an individual or larger with a union or under the WARN Act or any other state statute. The next would be coordinate benefits, the benefit continuation or conversion notices. Continuation would be the thing that we know, COBRA. Conversion might be life insurance or other things where it converts to an individual policy. And in the era of the ACA, going from my group health insurance, once COBRA is done, what options might be available to you through state exchanges. If you're paying severance, meaning something beyond what is required by your contract or your policy, make sure that it's in exchange for a general release. Get something back. And that something back usually can be peace of mind and certainty that you won't be sued for one thing or another, even if there's no merit to it, by peace of mind. Carefully use those releases and waivers. Again, one size does not fit all. Know that you may have a different waiver for someone under age 40 and someone over age 40. If it's a larger group, you need a longer consideration period, and you must have those censuses that we talked about, and it has to be properly drafted. Know that if you have it improperly drafted, you may actually be paying out severance, and the person can still sue you. One thing to mention with regard to those agreements is, as good as they are, there are some things that you cannot get a waiver on. Very quickly, those are wages, workers' comp, your benefit plans, claims under your benefit plans, claims to enforce the agreement if the employer is not honoring the terms of the agreement, and things that happen after they sign the agreement. Those claims are not released. Properly handle outplacement benefits and unemployment claims, critical to, as you said, David, moving on and getting ensuring that the person will move on to the next thing. Paying all wages when due. Hourly wages, salary, and then next, commissions, bonuses, and paid time off if it's your obligation to, or your policy of practice, or the state law requires that you pay paid time off, accrued but unused vacation leave, and so on. That you pay those, and you pay those in the period of time that is required by the statute. And California, by way of example, has a policy that says you have to pay within a certain period of time. If you don't, you have to pay a penalty based upon the person's regular wage. Honor the terms of your separation agreement. Know what they are and honor those terms. Understand that, you know, some claims, again, cannot be released. Carefully consider this. Whether it's a layoff or a termination, a larger RIF, will I rehire the person? Is that person eligible for rehire? That may be a matter of contract. That may be a matter of the union. That may just be, look, things are slow, but you're a terrific employee. I'd like to have you back. Sometimes it's, don't let the door hit you in the butt on the way out. We're so glad you're gone. Carefully consider that, because you may put that in your release agreement, that no rehire is available. Why do I also mention that? Sometimes with older workers, if they're let go as a part of the termination and then they reapply, they could actually have a claim for age discrimination because the release was only good up until the point that they signed, and they have a new claim potentially for failure to hire them. I guess the other is, would recall be required, meaning can the person be rehired under a union contract, and if so, is there a specific order to that? And the last couple of bullet points on this, David, would be flexible. The time considering who's going to be involved and what's going to be involved, the actual rollout, the planning, and so on, and then being flexible with regard to whether it's attrition, resignation, retirement, or new business demands up or down are important. Don't be so fixed that you don't have flexibility built into the system, including up into the moment of announcing and even the days after the RIF, you may actually be changing your position. And again, if you have to do a layoff or a RIF, try to do it right the first time, so you won't have to do it again anytime soon or sooner than you need to. And yes, because I'm in the business, but also because this is all I do, my recommendation would be seek help from HR peers in a discreet manner and certainly talk to your legal counsel.
We're speaking with Jim Reedy, the attorney, who is talking about RIFs and layoffs, an important function for HR senior executives. We'll be right back to wrap up this conversation on the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. And we're finishing up a great conversation with attorney Jim Reedy. And Jim, we've talked about layoffs and RIFs today, which are just really some of the most difficult conversations and things that are employees have to go through, HR representatives have to go through, and companies have to go through. Let's just be honest. It's one of the toughest things. You said at the beginning when we talked about this that you've done a lot of this and certainly you're dealing with it on a daily basis. Tell the audience exactly how you got into this, why this area where it's such a tough area, and what do you love about it?
Well, I'm one of those people that truly loves what he does. I love my job. And I represent management in employment disputes, and it's employment laws changed so much during my career, during my 24 years of doing this. There was no such thing before 1990 of the Family Medical Leave Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, USERRA, certainly the ACA, and lots of other statutes and regulations out there. It's become more complex. It's become more difficult, but the bottom line is it really, in some ways, is still the same. It's managing people, managing organizations, and my job is to keep my clients, large and small, doing their business, keeping at whatever it is, whatever their mission is, whether it's widgets or it's a social service agency, whatever it is, my job is to assist them so they can get back to their job, whether it's with compliance or managing a claim or the like. And in the case of RIFs and layoffs, I try to understand that every organization is different, every need is different, so listen very carefully as to what they want and how they want to do it, provide them with counsel both to comply with the law but also to reduce any risk that might be out there, and so, again, they can get back to work. I had the added benefit of this, and I'm going to sort of lift the curtain on this. Many years ago, in a job I had, I was actually terminated, and it was personally devastating to me. Now, the epilogue to that was the next day I was rehired by the same company. They offered me back. They said, sorry, we made a mistake. But that, to this day, and that was many years ago, stays with me. And so I know what it's like. And so I know it's a difficult conversation. I know it's difficult for managers to select people. I know it's difficult for HR to deal with it. It affects people and We're not robots. We understand. So taking that, doing what needs to be done, but doing it compassionately, doing it in a thoughtful manner, is what I try to assist my clients with. And it's in some ways, even in a difficult time for an organization, it is rewarding knowing if they've done it right, that they've assisted people and they've moved on. The organization's moved on, the individual's moved on, but to the extent that they can do it properly and not have any backlash claims, it is a successful enterprise. And to the extent they don't have to do it again anytime soon, all the better.
Absolutely, no question about that. You know, I know you do a lot of speaking. I know you're out there speaking at conventions and community functions and so forth. As we head here into November, I wanted to know, you know, can people come out and hear what you're all about? Where do they get that information? How do they connect with you? Certainly after this show on the HR Power Hour, you can go to the website, hrpowerhour.com, and you'll be able to click on Jim's information and go directly to him. But Jim, provide a little overview where people might be able to hear more about what you do, what you speak about, and what your practice is all about.
I do just about everything in the area of labor and employment law, representing management or employers. A wide variety of things on any given day, many different topics. But when I do presentations to HR groups and business leaders, it's all over New England and actually beyond. But on our website, Sheehan, www.sheehan.com, under events and attorneys, you'll see the things that are coming up if anyone is interested. I want to say you will be disappointed when you meet me, though, because on the radio, I am a double for Fabio. I'm tall and blonde. In person, not so much. But I do pride myself on providing practical information to employers at these various events, and I'm more than welcome the opportunity to meet with folks as they come out.
Well, I know, luckily, if they go to HRPowerHour.com right after this show, they'll be able to see your picture and bio, and gosh knows, I'm sure they'll be stunned and amazed. So, you know, Jim, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. I appreciate your candor, providing information, educational information to HR professionals and business leaders is what we do here on the HR Power Hour, and you have done a great job of providing important information on this very delicate but important topic.
David, thank you for all you do in the HR Power Hour for the HR community.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it. And now your HR tip of the week. Since Halloween just passed this week, let's call trick or treat. Employee hands out pot brownies to employees. This is based on an article on HRDailyAdvisor.com. The positive side of this incident of a former San Diego bus driver now joining the ranks of going too far with a prank by handing out pot brownies is the fact that the bus driver followed procedure to the letter, and supervisors act quickly to protect the passengers and the public. The real question is, how did the employee make the decision to bring pot brownies into their coworkers, and what can you really do about it? You can obviously have in your policy procedures and processes in place to make sure that HR deals with this in a proper way. Do you do drug testing? Do you make sure that employees know what's coming in and allow baked goods into the workplace? These are decisions you have to make. And that's your HR tip of the week. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.